not set a register even when you're on the leader.
Oh.
I want to be sure I'm past the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm looking and I'm trying, and it seems to me, yes, I can see that we're past the leader, mm-hmm. yes. And this is flipping up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Today is July the 2nd, 1984. Vera Hickman.
I think we left Blair ready to die in the hospital in 1940, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, he really was ready to die after they put a man in his room that had pneumonia. Because then he developed a terrific temperature, it was 105, and they really got worried and decided to move him. So they moved him to Bellevue, and as soon as he got to Bellevue, he began improving. Also at Bellevue, they took x-rays, and for the first time, he found out that he had had TB quite a few times. At least that's what they told him, because his lungs were very bad. Anyway, after he was in Bellevue, I used to take him food and special things to build him up, and he was out in a few weeks. And then I, at that period, I was working at the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis as a statistician. Remember this Sister Kenny?
Mm-hmm.
We had that method of treatment at that time, and one employee did nothing but send splints out. We got lots of literature, and
what was the difference between the two treatments?
Well, Sister Kenny believed in massage and hot pads, and she felt that the splints just made people more paralyzed, because within the top paralysis, this virus, I think it's a virus, affects the nerve, and it can kill the nerve completely, or it can just kill part of it. Anyhow, with the experience she had in Australia, she found that people got out of the paralysis much quicker if the nerve wasn't completely dead by her method than the doctor's method. Now, the doctors were prejudiced against her because she did not have a degree as a physician. But finally, the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis accepted her method, and we did away with all the splints. The splints, I mean. Then, when Blair found out that he had tuberculosis, he went to a little tuberculosis hospital up in New York State.
Sanitarium.
Yes, sanitarium mm-hmm. for a week or two. And then he came home and just stayed in bed because at that time the treatment for tuberculosis was nothing but bed rest. Since that, they found that these antibiotics, you can actually kill the bug. But at that time, it wasn't so. And so we put in an application for the National Jewish Hospital in Denver, and was accepted, and went there, was there for almost a year. And when he left there, well, he left, I think they were glad to have him leave because he was very argumentative and he would send the patients' temperatures up. For instance, there were southern people in there that were very anti-Semitic, and here they were being treated free of charge with meals and everything by the National Jewish Hospital. So he would
he would
get them excited and their temperatures would go up, and at the same time there were some Jewish refugees from Germany who were very anti-union and what he considered reactionary in other ways, so he got their temperatures up too. Now, they very seldom, they said once they found an active bug there. I really think that he had black lung and didn't have tuberculosis because at that time you didn't hear anything
and
about
that. And had he been exposed to anything that was...
Well, he
worked in mines or anything?
Yes. When he was 12 years old, he worked on a coal barge in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with all that damp weather there. And then when he first shipped out on coal-burning ships, and he was a coal-burning fireman,
mm-hmm.
shoveling coal into the furnaces. And you know how hot that gets. And yeah, anyway, that is my interpretation. Anyhow, they did let him out, and the World War II was on then. So he went to,
when is this, 19?
I would say this was probably when he got out, it was probably about 1942 or 43.
Mm-hmm.
And he left Denver and went to the West Coast to ship out as a seaman, because he was anxious to get in the fight against Hitler and the whole anti-Comintern business. He was anxious to get into the fight anyway. And so they sent him to, he was a merchant seaman on a ship to New Guinea.
Oh.
And they were there a few months. He loved the tropics. And then when he came out, back to California. He had a few temporary jobs right on the West Coast, I believe, going from one port to
mm-hmm.
another.
Mm-hmm.
Then he came back to New York.
Where were you meanwhile?
I was in New York, and I was then working in war plants, because I had seen an ad while I was at the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. I felt that I should get into a war plant. I saw an ad to be that the Ford Instrument Company wanted to train women as engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And you were supposed to be a major in math or science. I wasn't exactly a major in either one, although I had had quite a lot of math, and I should have been a major in it. So anyway, I got hired. And I worked there. The hours were very long, 6 days a week, 9 hours a day, and in the evening I was doing political work or collecting money for the war effort and bringing people in to give blood transfusions and getting them myself and so forth. And when he came back from the West Coast, he was going to ship out on the Atlantic Coast. And he thought that we should get married so that if anything happened to him, I would get some money.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, we got married. We went to the city hall, and my sister Mary was a witness, and one of the cleaning women in the courthouse was the other witness.
I like that kind of
And then he shipped out to, well, he did influence me to quit that job at Ford Instrument. I'll tell you a little bit about that, because first I was put in unit tests, and there were quite a few women. There were men and women. There were probably about 25 and quite a few young people. And and I, you know, was very interested in all the politics of fascism, and these people really hadn't heard much about it, so I was always talking politics. And we decided, a couple of the other people and I decided that we should get into the union as well as the people that worked, did the regular factory work. So we were signing people up, and anyway, I was then transferred out of that department, the manager of the department.
You think it was because of your organizing?
Oh, yes, because I think we had a little meeting before we started one day or something, and he came in and listened to everything, and right after that I was transferred out, but to a better job. However, I don't think I got an increase in pay. I was transferred to main test, and this company made fire control instruments. That means these were really giant calculators that figured out how to
fire
the
cannon or a weapon.
Well, and I don't know, the weapons, whatever they had on the ship. And for instance, one instrument in main test that we worked on would be the size of a small room.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, this kitchen that mm-hmm. we're in right now. And I had worked with screwdrivers that were 6 feet long, because you had to connect one unit with another. It had hundreds of units, and they all had to be connected, yes, synchronized correctly, and then you would test it. Now, one of these machines would usually take about 2 months to test completely. And some of the equipment that you tested with was very heavy, so I really did get a little exhausted on that job. And I had ulcers, too. I remember taking medicine. Anyway, my got me to quit that job, and then we got married, and I got another job in an electronics plant as with the title of engineer. However, I was in charge of the instruction books that were put out at this place, and I had a few engineers working under me, but they got twice as much wages as I did.
And were they doing the same thing?
Yes. I was telling them what to do and checking what they did and so forth.
But they were getting...
Yes, they were getting double because they had majored in engineering in college.
Yeah.
They had degrees in engineering, and I didn't. But this plant particularly had a record. Before the war started, I was told by people in the plant that quite a few of the men came in Nazi uniforms. And as soon as war broke out, of course, they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They took off their uniforms. But there was a lot of Nazi sentiment in this place. In fact, so much that a few of us got up a petition to about a certain individual who was also talking about assassinating Roosevelt, and the Secret Service came and checked up. He wasn't fired or anything, but that was the history of that place. Anyway, when the war was over, my boss called me in and said that he said, what kind of company have you been keeping? And he said, the FBI was around inquiring about you, and then I was fired. Of course, quite a few people were fired when the war was over, so, but I think it, anyhow, after that job, I got a job with my Blair was back now from, he had been both on the, in the Pacific zone and the Western zone. He had shipped out and brought Nazi prisoners back from Europe, and then he worked for a short time in the National Maritime Union office in charge of the department, illness and injury department. And he wasn't too popular there because he got the lawyers to lower the percentage that they were taking off of
their
cases. Mm-hmm. Yes, he cut them down quite a bit. And anyway, while he was in that job, he had a hemorrhage. So he came back home, and I got a job to have bed rest again, and I got a job with Arthur Murray from noon until 9 at night, I believe it was. It was an 8-hour day, and I got my job was called psychologist because Arthur Murray had been sold on a personality test for the dancing teachers, and I had told him that I didn't think the test was very good. It wasn't even, I mean, it had sections in on handwriting, and nobody has scientifically proved what handwriting means. And anyway, I tried to convince him that the test wasn't any good, but that was too much for his ego, so I gave the test to applicants for dancing teachers. Now, while I was there, there was a lot of favoritism, because every floor, this was around 43rd Street and Madison Avenue. And actually, Arthur Murray had this was his private little place to enjoy himself, because he liked to dance with the young girls. And he used to do some of that there. And his wife was there, had an office in front.
What was her name now?
Her name was...
Was it Irene Cat?
No, I would have told you if they hadn't mentioned it. Well, anyway, that'll come to me later. Oh, Kay.
Oh.
Catherine married. Catherine. Her name was Catherine.
Okay.
And so the secretary sat in the front. Her desk was, and mine was in the front, and the main accountant. And then they had their offices, like, they had with doors mm-hmm. in front of us. So, they had the system was arranged that on every floor there was a receptionist who decided who was going to work. And these receptionists were all special pets of the Murrays. And so that some dancing teachers could come there, they'd have to sit all day, and they may get 1 hour teaching while somebody else taught all the hours. So there
was
one
agency, in other words.
No, this was a dancing studio.
Yeah, and they were choosing the teachers that would teach their students.
That's right. The receptionist had the authority to call for the teachers that she wanted.
Yes.
So it wasn't a very fair system, and the teachers organized, and they involved me in helping them because I supported what they did. And however, when the strike took place, he hired detectives. One detective sat where the music, where the telephone operator was. The music was all piped out from that room to the various rooms where the dancing was.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hired this detective to sit there. They were terrified that somebody might come in and take the music off, and then they couldn't mm-hmm. teach, you see. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Murray would come in. Oh, this was after I got caught. Anyway, I eventually, one day, Catherine Murray came into the ladies' room, and she caught me talking to an organizer for the union.
Mm-hmm.
So I was immediately moved to the back of the floor, to an office in the back. She was going to fire me, but she talked to the her lawyer, and the lawyer said that with the Wagner Labor Relations Act, she was not supposed to fire me for union activity. So I stayed in, but when the strike did come about, they thought it was a little strange that I stayed in. I was told by the union to stay there, you know, to get all the information I could for them. And so I was fired, but and then I joined the picket line. Now this picket line was quite interesting because these were dancing teachers, so they did little skits on the picket line. And Mr. Murray would fill paper sacks with water, get out the window, and break them over their heads. Silly things like that. And before I was fired, I was there for a while after I had been moved in the back, and he would come in and talk to me. I remember he said, "How can you possibly give money to the CIO? Don't you know that all goes to Moscow?" And I said, "Well, I always heard that Moscow gold was distributed here. Which way does it go?" And he would say, "Well, they collect it from all the unions and then set it there, and they send a little back here and there." I don't know. We had these crazy discussions. And they also had some detectives as pupils dancing with the dancing teachers to find out which ones were for the union and so forth. And Arthur Murray set up a company union, and he wrote the leaflets for it. He would put them in the waste paper basket so I could let the union know, and they would come out with information before his own paper would come out. Anyway, you can see why I didn't stay there very long. So from there... Oh, did I believe actually, when I was fired, I asked Mrs. Murray for a letter of recommendation, and she gave me a very nice letter that said I was fired because I had convinced them that the personality test I was giving to the dancing pupils to the dancing teachers wasn't any good. So that was really something. Now, a few other interesting things that took place there. The organizer of the union told me that practically every time they met with Mr. Murray, he would say, "Why don't you go back to Russia?" And nobody in the union that was meeting with him was from Russia, except he himself was. His name, before he changed it to Murray because of the dancing business, was Teichman, and his brother was Teichman at the present time, the treasurer of the Murray's dancing studios. Anyway, since neither Blair nor I, now I can call him my husband, we've been married a while now.
Right.
You call him that. Neither of us had a job. He was practically recovered, and I didn't have a job. We decided we would go to the West Coast. I would be able to get unemployment insurance for a while until he really got on his feet, and then we would decide what to do. So we took a trip to across the country. We went by bus, I believe, and stopped in Ohio, where my sister Mary lived, and they had a car that seemed marvelous that they would sell us for $800 to go on to Spokane. I was going to visit home. And so after a few weeks there, we did go on to Spokane with the car. It was the first really good car I had ever driven. And because I had only had this one experience with the Model A Ford. Anyway, when we got to Spokane, we visited with my family, and they had an old Oldsmobile that they had used very little. It didn't have much mileage on it, and they told me they would sell their car for $300. So we decided to take their car, and we sold my sister's car for $800 and sent them the money. Well, that was a terrible mistake, because when we started for California, we only got about probably 75 miles to a town called Richfield, and the bearing was burnt out in the motor. So we left it there, the car there, and we came back to Spokane to get a rebuilt motor and had it sent down. Anyway, we got that fixed. And then we were so careful and didn't go over 40 miles an hour or whatever it was supposed to be then when you broke in a car. And put oil in. We were very, very careful. But anyway, by the time we got to Los Angeles, the motor was, the bearing was burnt out again. And finally, that car, to be a little ahead of the story, we finally, after an accident where we got run into from the rear, we drove it into a junkyard and got $5 for the car. However, when we got to California, we did know people in San Pedro in that area, but because he still was supposed to be on bed rest, we found a little place up above Yucaipa. Also, that's not too far from Palm Springs, but this was way up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. We get there, the sun is shining, a beautiful day. And a place called Chateau L'Espérance. The owner used to have a sort of guest ranch there, and he had various small houses and a nice house for himself and his wife. We rented one of these for $25 a month. It had a armor from the Queen of Romania the living room, and anyway. There were a lot of peacocks there that used to fly around and be on the roof from time to time, and we took quite a few trips from there, and my husband decided he was going to write mystery stories, and I would type them up for him. Anyway, the first one we sent in came back saying,
I can't use this at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So he got discouraged and we didn't write anymore. And then we saw an ad in the paper saying, learn invisible reweaving and earn $5 an hour, which was...
Now this is on your paper now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, while we were up there. It's way above your paper mm-hmm. because, let me tell you, that was quite important. The day that we took it, we stayed there that night, and the next morning we were snowed in under 2 feet of snow. And I was supposed to go that next day to San Bernardino for my unemployment insurance. I was getting unemployment insurance from my job with Arthur Murray.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, you could see it was quite high up there. Now, we saw the ad for the reweaving. So we decide to move to Los Angeles. He's feeling better now, and he registers for the reweaving class, and I go to the Wallace for President headquarters and volunteer to work there.
Well, where is the class that he registered for? Where was it?
In Los Angeles. I think we found a little place. We were living in the valley around Van Nuys. We lived in several little houses around there, motels I think they were, that we were staying in temporarily while this was going on. Anyway, he registered in the weaving school because he was always very good with his hands. You know, seamen know how to tie all the knots and this thing, this sort of thing. So I was working, collecting research for the Wallace campaign. And anyway, Blair had another hemorrhage, so I went down to the school and they said that I could take over his class, which I did. And then I would teach him at home, lying down. He could practice a little bit. And as soon as he felt better and as soon as the class was over, we started earning a living at reweaving. We called it Marguerite's Reweaving. I still have the card from Van Nuys for the first place.
I'd like
the card. Oh, you would?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I think I'm back for you. And so we did that. That must have been that year. We did that until Max got arrested for deportation. In 1952, I think he was arrested.
How did that happen?
Well, that was the McCarthy period.
Yes, I know.
He was not an American citizen.
I understand.
And he had escaped the immigration department. Somebody must have reported to him. He had an accent, for one thing.
Did he?
It sounded more Scotch to me. I don't know. It was quite attractive. Scotch, Irish.
Yeah. He had a
Liverpool accent, so somebody that didn't know him before might have reported him. I really don't know. And he was arrested for illegal entry. Now, in the papers, when he had various hearings, it came out they called him a danger to the United States government, and he was also told when he was taken to Terminal Island by the men that arrested him, by the immigration agent, he was told that if he cooperated, he would be given his citizenship right away. Of course, that's the way they tried to get school pigeons at that time. We were living at that time on Laurel Canyon. We had been there for some years doing the reweaving. This was from about 1947 to 1952. We had one place in Sherman Oaks that we shared for a year with the McGrath, Marion and Tom McGrath.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we lived together. I did the cooking and Marion did the dishes. I don't remember who did the cleaning, but we probably didn't do very much cleaning.
where were Max hearings?
They were in Los Angeles.
Where?
I really don't know.
Immigration
Department,
uh-huh.
I suppose.
Uh-huh.
I don't know where they were.
I was wondering that too.
And you see, the people, all of the English people that were arrested for deportation were deported because England cooperated with the United States and they would accept the person. People that were born in any of the Eastern countries, you know, the Soviet Union or Hungary Poland, this and that, they would were not deported because these countries refused to accept them.
I see.
So, I will go into his deportation a little bit later.
I think we better stop.
Yes, I think.